If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the light of the Most Radiant One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening, our seminar topic is The Blessed Ones from Other Worlds Are Here. So, hello, Blessed Ones from Other Worlds. Indeed, you are here. And, you know, perhaps you haven't thought of yourself in that context, but it's time that you do. And that you have the chutzpah, let's say, to step forward as exactly who and what you are. You've all come from other worlds and had to descend, as it were, to come into this time-space continuum that we call the third density. So in that context, each one of you could be called an avatar. Does the term literally mean someone who has come down from a higher plane, world, or dimension to Earth? So in that understanding, you could be called avatars. You could also be called bodhisattvas. A bodhisattva is a soul with such compassion that it embodies for the sake of serving other people, even when it has earned the right not to have to come back here. So a bodhisattva, another term for that, is the son of God or the lineage of the son of God, or, plural, the sons of God or the Adonim. You see, there are many, many ways to phrase the same teaching, depending upon which context, which scripture, which valence, and which cultural epoch you're speaking from. So let's begin our mosey this evening with an inner meditation. Take a deep breath. And in your mind's eye, place yourself in an enormous million petaled lotus. Sit right in the center like a golden child, radiant. Beautiful being of light, pure, innocent, but also aware that you're sitting in the midst of every single place, time period, age, yuga, every single cycle that has ever graced this particular orb that we call the Earth. And beyond other worlds, other dimensions, other universes, because there's never been a time that you did not exist. Can you wrap yourself around that? There's never been a time that you did not exist. For you live and move and have your being in God. So what is true of God is true also of you, who are made in the image and likeness of your Creator. So that part of you, untouched by conditioned consciousness, or time frames, or any passage in time and space, that one, sit as that, in the center of unlimited petals, of becoming and manifestation. And just get a sense of the radiant light, of each of these petals. They form actually what could be called your Merkaba. For in my experiences in time travel and soul travel, I've observed that our Merkaba is actually the sum totality of every single place that we have touched with our consciousness and our energetic signature. And so, just be aware of that part of you that sits quite apart from its participation in the myriad of scenarios and worlds that are going on at any given moment in time and space. You sit above that. And yet, when you're free, when you're truly free in that higher divine self, you can, if you wish, elect to touch down at any point in time, in space, in any dimension or world by the movement of your inner awareness to a harmonic chord with that particular place that you would like to access. And the minute you do that, you appear there. So have a sense of the vastness of yourself in that state before it became conditioned, before it became, as it were, extruded into a particular embodiment in a particular age and timeline. And experience that. Expand your aura now until you have the viewpoint of one that is overlooking and overseeing and overlighting all of these myriad of appearances that you have made within what we could call here the totality of your experience thus far in time and space. I say thus far because creation is eternally expanding beyond anything we could possibly imagine. And so the movement of your spirit, of your awareness, is continually exponentially expanding as well. There's no end to enlightenment. There's no end to the expansion of divine awareness. There's no end to consciousness, which is the same as saying your divine self. So as you begin to expand in the sense of beingness, begin also to realize that all of the experiences that you're having in time and space, your present life circumstances, are absolutely the most perfect for that divine spirit that you are, that is within you, that is working out a particular learning scenario, a particular venue of inquiry. And all of the experiences are pre-orchestrated out of time and pre-opted for as learning scenarios. And nothing more than that. They're all temporary. They're all passing ephemeral staging arenas for learning and for practicing what you've learned. You don't know that you've learned something until you enter a particular scenario designed for the working out of that particular context. And then you can observe how much you've learned and what you still need to fine-tune and perfect. Why perfect? Because you are holding yourself to a learning program which will emerge you as nothing less than an ascended Christ-conscious being. A great individuality with cosmic potential as a creator, as a co-creator. You're in training for that. You're in training to manifest worlds in the cycles and ages yet to unfold. So of course you want to perfect your ability mentally, emotionally, spiritually, multidimensionally. You want to have full let's say, operative control over every level of your being from the position of that vaster, overseeing self. That is the whole program that you have presented for yourself. So let's realize the simple fact, I think it's so important to realize this, because in realizing this, there's going to be a great inner release of so much concern, worry, and conflict that seems to disturb so many of you. And that is whoever you are with right now, and whatever is taking place in your present life, and your physical body, and its conditions, all of that is part of your own awakening, self-mastery, and ascension. You know, I had a very interesting experience the other day. I've often said that time itself exists only in the human brain and its interpretations. But I had a direct experience of that the other day coming into my body. Not that I haven't had it before, but this was so slowed down so that I could experience every little bit of it that I knew I was supposed to share it with you. I've told you some time back that we identify and move into this life time-space continuum through a time lock. This time lock means that every time you exit your body and go into the timeless, you return to the place that you've made that time lock commitment with. So this time lock is located in the human brain and operates in the beta level of brainwave function. So as soul awareness, I'm in that vaster self. I'm free. I'm in infinity, which means there's no time. And I slowly return to my physical body. This happened 2 days ago. And upon awakening, I was suddenly in no time, in pure awareness, and unlimited by specific time and place. And as I entered my body and integrated, I experienced the blur of whirling atoms rearranging themselves to focus me within my preset and pre-elected time frame and my pre-elected time and place physically. In other words, I consciously experienced my time lock being activated. And I arrived in my body. I sinked in. I felt my consciousness lock in and settle as it is. And then I found myself repeating the day, the date, the time, and my location inwardly to myself. And I said, it's 8:35 a.m. And then I opened my eyes and looked at my clock, and it was exactly 8:35 a.m. Now, I usually make a habit of telling myself what time and date and place I am when I come into my body. This was such a vivid experience of watching the atoms actually come into agreement with my time lock that I wanted to share it with you. And I also suggest, as your own spiritual exercise, if you'd like to try this, that before you open your eyes, you inwardly intuit what time it is. And let the first thought that comes to your mind be it, don't change, and then look at the clock. And begin to practice coming into attunement with the time before you open your eyes. And also see if you can catch yourself when you come in from the soul plane and descend into this time lock agreement that you have in your present lifetime. I think you'll be amazed. It's really, really, really interesting to catch yourself when you're operating in other dimensions. I had another experience that happened this morning that I wanted to share, because again, it's something that we all do, but you may not be aware that you're doing it until it's brought to your attention. We all do out-of-body work. When your body sleeps or daydreams or has a nap or cat naps or nods off However, that occurs for you when you lose consciousness of being here. Your body falls asleep, and you as a spirit exit your body, and because you're on Earth assignment, of course you're going to go and be of service to whoever needs that upon the inner planes. So we serve in all different varieties of ways, but this is something that happened to me. I was returning to my body this morning, and as I was, I glanced down, and as I flew overhead in soul travel, I looked below, and I saw a child, a little girl around 8 years of age, lying in a creek bed where she had obviously drowned. She had long blonde hair and was wearing jeans and a yellow plaid shirt. In fact, I would recognize the child if I saw her in the physical. Beside her stood two tall white angels. Now, the angels didn't have the authority to take her spirit to the other side, and they were waiting to be directed, and of course awaiting the final decision as to whether she was to return to her family or to the inner planes. Now, only a conscious child of God has the authority to speak God's word and will concerning these matters, and as it happened, I was that child of God that had suddenly arrived on the scene. So I dropped down beside the child and I said, "Child of God, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and in the authority of Jesus Christ, I speak life into you." Immediately the child opened her eyes, coughed up all the water she'd swallowed, and soon an ambulance and the paramedics arrived. So I watched as the angels by this time were still standing there, but they were getting ready to leave because they saw the situation had been resolved. They were no longer needed. And they put the child on a stretcher and into the ambulance. I saw her weeping parents, and I also saw their relief when they found out that their child was alive. And I saw them embrace. And then I followed the ambulance to the hospital, and I saw the girl and her parents reunited. It was so touching. And then I came back in my body, and I thought, wow, wow. Just like that, you know, decisions about life and death are made. Just like that, I was called upon to speak life into that situation. How did I know to do that? Well, I know that life is always God's will. God's will is life, eternal life, and that more abundant. It is also God's will that we speak His words and have His authority and dominion upon the earth and over all things concerning the earth. So, you see, I was right in alignment with my divine function, my divine spiritual authority, the situation that had presented itself, and my word was needed to release the angels from their concern, because they can only stand by. They don't have the authority to speak the word. Only the child of God, the human being, has the authority to speak these words in time and space and upon earth. So I wanted to bring that up and see if maybe some of you have had similar out-of-body experiences. I have them on a regular basis, so I don't often think of mentioning them because, to me, they're very natural. But sometimes I meet people and they have never even considered the possibility that the dreams that they have or the experiences they have are actually recalls of out-of-body soul travel service assignments that they're functioning in. And so I wanted to mention that to you. So also, your spiritual understanding, a particular, let's say, lens of consciousness that you're electing to look through and to view your life from, your worldview, all of that is exactly what you need to be experiencing at this particular time. You know, I can just hear some some people saying, all of what I'm experiencing, or what about my abusive spouse or my child on drugs or in prison or my addiction to whatever, or maybe you're in a hospital or even a hospice. What about that? Yes, whatever it is that you're experiencing, you have decided you needed to experience as the very fastest method of learning whatever it is that you wanted to experience and to learn in order to have a sense of completion here. This life is all about completion. It's about fulfillment and completion for those of you that aren't going to pass this way again. Some of you may be passing this way again, and you won't have that sense of urgency to fit it all in and complete it. But others of you know exactly what I'm talking about, because you know that this is it. This is your final exam, and that you're going to a very different place from this third-dimensional Earth when you leave here this time. So there's really no exceptions. Always you decide, you elect, and you orchestrate. Now, you know, maybe some of you are saying, I do? Well, how do I do that when I can't even remember? Well, you make all of these decisions when you are awake and aware and conscious. And that's before you're born into your earth body. And that human brain brings you into what's called the veil of forgetfulness, which is very appropriate. You need to forget the vaster life in order to get down here and get integrated and grounded. And then you gradually decompress and awaken when it's proper for you to do so. But first of all, you need to get in here fully and make a commitment to your earth body and your present life. That's part of your mission. So these decisions are made in your spiritually aware state and in coordination with your governing councils. And these will vary depending upon, where you've come from, your specific mission, the oversoul group that you're part of, and so forth. Those of you that come in through the Ashtar Galactic Command, you all come in through what is called the Office of the Christ and the Order of Melchizedek. What is that? Well, the Office of the Christ oversees the teaching, the spiritual teaching, of all bona fide spiritual paths. All of them eventually will feed into the major ray of synthesis, which is love wisdom, represented respectively by Jesus the Christ and Gautama Buddha. Buddha brought forward the aspect of enlightenment. Jesus the Christ embodied as the love aspect. And together, they hold that focus of love wisdom for two of the major pathways that people find truth upon this particular planet, either through the Eastern pathway or the Western. But at one point, they converge and meet. And out of the office of the Christ, whose head is the Christ, the one we know as Jesus the Christ, it's the head of the office, which he holds in concert with Moses and Elijah. They form a trinity. And then you have 144,000 ascended masters that you would recognize the names from all the world traditions that also administer the divine spiritual teachings and mantles in this world, in time and space. They all work in harmony. They all work together. They're all considered to be disciples of the Christ. They all, in one form or another, teach love. And love is the way, the only way, back to the higher divine realms. So there's a great coordinated endeavor here. Now, the Order of Melchizedek is the lineage that is also headed by the eternal high priest, the Lord Jesus the Christ, and it administers the keys for consciousness transcendence. In other words, the Melchizedeks know the dimensional codes that open the gates of light, the portals of light and inner consciousness for each dimensional level. And they know that consciously. so that they can serve as the way showers. There's a whole lineage of the way showers, and they all function to the divine light and sound of God, which means they go beyond the light codes into the living word, which is the sound tapestry, the spoken word of God that we attune to as the sound current within us. So they teach the way of knowing God through the light, the science of the light and sound. And those are the members of the Order of Melchizedek. Now, everyone benefits by being ordained into the priesthood of the Order of Melchizedek. In fact, all priests and nuns and clergy are actually ordained in that when they do their ordinational ceremony. But also, there are certain ones that go about, we used to do it in our seminars when we were traveling internationally, and my friend Sharula, Princess Sharula of Telos, she also has been doing that. Dan Chesbro has also been doing that. There are certain ones that Spirit has asked to orchestrate these ordinations into the priesthood of the Order of Melchizedek. And you can't do it too often. You can have as many of these ceremonies as you feel drawn, because there's different levels that you can access. But also, it decodes and awakens you. There's something that is deeply stirred when you go through these very sacred ordinational ceremonies. Some of you may remember when, this was in 1994, when we had the large ascension celebration on Mount Shasta. I was one of the many presenters of that event, in that event. And it was orchestrated by World Ascension Network with Princess Sharula and her twin flame, Shield, both very dear friends of mine. And they conducted, along with myself and Solario, this ordination where people would come up, and there were two by two of us that held the focus, and people would come up and they would be ordained into the Order of Melchizedek. There were 4,000 people there for that particular event. And then we did another one for the 12-12 in Egypt when we did the Nile cruise. So some of you may have already experienced this, but since some of you have asked me about this recently, I wanted to go into it in a little detail. And just to let you know, that these are the two lineages that you all belong to. And so having that recognition consciously in the physical is very helpful. And when I said you all belong to it, I'm speaking primarily to the Earth-based volunteers from the Ashtar Command right now. Most of you probably that are drawn to listen to me each week are probably members of the Ashtar Galactic Command. So, You have these levels and lineages that are part of your inheritance. So it is important to understand and know about them. If you want more information, I think the best source would be The Keys of Enoch by Dr. J.J. Hertak. If you go into the glossary in the back of the book, they have these orders listed and described in some detail, along with the brotherhoods and the various councils of light. I think it's very, very useful information for all of you to have as starseed. And then while you're at it, go through the entire book, read all of it, because that book will really let you know the science behind the consciousness shift that we are now undergoing. So your choices in your life at this time, they're involving the things that you've wanted to experience, complete, or more closely scrutinize, that can only be experienced this side of the ascension here in this third dimension. So many, many of you are not going to be coming back to this third dimensional Earth. This is this is it. This is your last visit here. So there's a lot of things that you may want to fine-tune or experience or practice while you have the chance, because it's not going to be very much longer that you're going to have the opportunity to work out certain things. And be aware that that problems and adversity are part of the learning course here. This planet is called a school of difficult endeavor. Sometimes we call it the school of hard knocks, but actually that's totally accurate. It is a planet governed by the fourth ray of harmony through conflict. So we always have to wrestle our way free. There's always a certain efforting. Like, for example, the effort that a cicada goes through to get out of that beetle shell so that it can sprout its wings and fly and burst into song. Or the same process that a caterpillar goes through to emerge as a butterfly. These are all metaphors for what we actually have to struggle to achieve. And the truth is, if you try to help the butterfly out of its chrysalis, or if you try to remove the shell from the cicada so that it can emerge, it's going to die, because it's only in the effort that it exerts that it's able to have the strength to mount and be winged and to mount into the sky from being formerly an earthbound creature. And the same thing applies to the sons and daughters of God. It's by overcoming and transcending in consciousness the problems and the difficulties of our earth life that we are able to soar in soul transcendence above them. So as the Master Moria has often said, blessed be the obstacles by which we achieve. And that skilled horseman likes a really challenging horse, and likewise, the star-seeded ones, the blessed ones, such as yourselves here from other worlds, you really pack in everything that you possibly can cram into your life experience here to prove to yourself your levels of proficiency and mastery. So that's a different way to look at your life, isn't it? Now, there are many, many blessed ones from other worlds and periods of Earth history who are presently here on Earth, are coming in to assist Earth, or will be arriving in the next cycle of time. And these souls are here specifically as ascension experts. And yes, that would be you, even though you don't realize it. Many of you don't realize that. In fact, many of you are trying to ascend, and that's not what you're here to do. You're not here to ascend. You're here to descend and to assist others with the ascension. That sounds radical for some people. But those of you that recognize yourself and what I'm saying, enough said, you know that. So these higher souls, these blessed ones, are currently arriving in record numbers. And it's likely, very likely, that you are one of them. They, or perhaps I should say, we arrive in all sorts of ways. Some are born the usual way. Some are conceived aboard ship or even upon another planet, and then they're brought to Earth. Some come as walk-ins. Some come back in time, that would be this current period on Earth, from the future, and that would be the unfolding that's taking place now upon Earth and into the future. So always they come in to bridge, to connect the dots of one age to the next, as seamlessly and then as effortlessly as possible. Now, we've done several seminars on the special visionary children. Like, for example, the little Russian boy, Borishka, not so little now, I guess he's about 13. Borishka came in with very clear memory of his past life on Mars. And he also came in knowing the future of what would happen on the planet Earth. And very, very interesting. You can Google him and read what he has to say if you haven't already done so. That's Boriska, B-O-R-I-S-K-A. And there's also very young children that we did a seminar on some time back, who from the ages of 2 to 8 were already revealing the things that would be coming upon our planet. And they were mentioning the coming of their planet, possibly it's Nibiru, but that their planet would be coming, would be visible, and that they would be returning to that planet when it came near to the Earth. Really interesting things that come out of the mouth of young children before they know how to lie and before they're heavily conditioned by school. So these specially gifted children, for example, like the visionary artist Akiani and others, or like Bratzel that I spoke about a couple shows back, the angelic gentle soul from Croatia, whose gentle gaze can heal and transform lives. These are all these extraordinarily precious, blessed souls that are coming in on the planet now. And these blessed ones from other worlds, they show up in all colors and conditions. They come from all cultures, from every religious background or no religious background, and yet they have all come in to prepare the world for what we call the return of the Christ. The Christ returns as an individual, and the Christ consciousness returns to each individual. So you have a singular appearance of that principle embodied, and we are told that the same Jesus that ascended and left when he was caught up in a cloud ship, a Merkaba, will also return in the same manner. This same Jesus will return in the same manner. So we know there will be a physical return of the resurrected, ascended Christ that we knew as Jesus of Nazareth. So we have that, and then we have the collective Messiah, which is all of you that are awakening to your Christ consciousness and are being the living and expressing the living love of God on the planet today. That's the Christ consciousness. It's the unconditioned living love of God. So we have many people living on Earth today who have physically arrived here and blended into our Earth society. And we have them from Venus, Mars, Saturn, the Pleiades, and probably from all the planets in our physical, our third dimensional solar system. But you also have beings who are stepping through the dimensions and the dimensional portals and coming in from other time-space sectors, some appropriately, some inappropriately, because it's not their time to ascend. But we have a lot of let's say, consciousness penetrations into our time-space sector, because what we're undergoing is a very rapid ascension. And it's of extreme interest to everybody in the universe. Everybody's watching Earth with great, great interest, because it's like watching a fetus grow in like 15 minutes to adulthood. That's how fast it is, comparatively speaking, what is taking place right now on our Earth. Omniconic, my friend from Venus, came here in the 50s as a child in her Venusian astral body. She lives on the astral dimension of Venus, and she has recognized over 1,000 of her fellow Venusians walking the streets of Earth, of which, of course, I was one. And so you can't really tell who is from another planet or not, because they all look the same, since all life was seeded on this planet from elsewhere. Are there any indigenous humans? Yes, but they wouldn't be interested in listening to a program like this. The indigenous humanoids are very earthly and of the earth, and they're not spiritually very, let's say, activated and stimulated, although that's one of the functions that we're here, is to kind of stir the pot and see how many we can awaken. And you know, that's primarily the bulk of our work, is to love people awake, to love them whole, to to stand in with them and support them, come alongside them and support them in their exploration into the deepening of their awareness. But it's, you know, it's a work that the Holy Spirit is actually the authoring energy behind all awakening is the Divine Spirit itself. It's being at this time poured forth on all flesh so that people are exponentially awakening throughout the world and very, very quickly now. So I, too, as a young child, remember coming to this planet from a wonderful place I later came to know was Venus. Of course, you don't have a name for these things when you're very young, but I certainly knew I came from a place that was very, very different from the world that I was awakening to as a young child. People come back in time also as interdimensional time travelers. You know, coast to coast, Art Bell, formerly Art Bell, now the George Nouri, coast to coast program late at night, has interviewed a few of these time travelers. And, I've heard a few, not too many, because I don't usually stay up that late. But, you know, such people that have the courage to reveal their identities are usually taking a tremendous, risk. Very often people who are extraterrestrial contactees, particularly those who have had encounters of the fourth and fifth kind, which fourth would be face-to-face encounter, and fifth would be actually being taken aboard ship. Often these people are threatened by the, you know, the black operatives, and or their lives or their jobs are threatened, or their families. And so they're usually told they must, you know, keep silent, or, you know, these other dire things could happen. I remember, sometime in the 90s, listening to Art Bell interview a time traveler who was apparently taken out of commission as he was speaking on Coast to Coast. I remember he was revealing some very deep, dark secrets of things that were being covered up and things that were going on behind the scenes, and even warned that they could triangulate his location. And in fact, he was afraid that they might do that before he could share all that he wanted to say. And, you know, the dark agenda is always to keep you dumbed down and ignorant and drugged if possible and depressed and disempowered, because spiritually awakened free people can't be controlled. So anyway, the man was speaking and disclosing some pretty amazing things, and all of a sudden he was silenced right there on the airwaves as he was speaking. It was like there were some abrupt sounds in the background and then silence and dead air for a period of time. And when Art came back on the air, he said that we certainly wouldn't be hearing from that man again. It was really creepy and very surreal, and he didn't say anything more about it, but it was a very sobering thought. At that time, it was the same time I was also experiencing a lot of death threats and black helicopters and bugs on my phone and under my car and all sorts of weird things happening in my own life. So anyone that dares to step forth with information that's considered freeing to people, where they take back their own minds, their own thoughts, their own, the sovereignty of their own lives, as you can see, is quite a threat to the dark operatives. But not to worry, because you see, God has already won. It's already been completed. And we're dealing in past time scenarios that actually have already been worked out and very well and very victoriously. But that's, again, another deep topic that I sometimes have gone into in the past about the difference between time sequence and the completed work that has already been taking place out of time. So many other world visitors do not speak out. However, you know, there's a certain safety in numbers. And so many today who are coming out and openly speaking about their encounters. Many of these people are very, very old, people who have been in the military or the Air Force or in Secret Service that are retired, and they don't have anything to lose at this point, so they are speaking out. History Channel has had some excellent disclosure type of information that's come out on UFO files. I forget the names of all of them, but about three or four different programs, Ancient Aliens, have had some really, really excellent interviews and information that's been shared in documentary films that have, you know, finally been released to the public of something more than Roswell. You know, I get tired of watching Roswell, but they're actually showing things that have happened in just the last year or two. And it's part, I believe, of the overall disclosure that's now taking place. The fact remains that many of these blessed souls that are currently children, even toddlers and young adults, they cannot be denied. I mean, they are so in our face at this time with their awareness and the proclamations and the prophetic utterances that are coming out of the mouths of these young children, that, you know, it's a force that itself is prophetic in the sense that the Bible said that a little child would lead us and that we had to be as little children to enter the kingdom of heaven. So these children are actually modeling that scriptural verse as they indeed are the vanguards of heavenly consciousness. But not all of these special souls are in young bodies. Some have been here for, you know, quite a long time and have served as the early forerunners of the Golden Age, which is now in process of emerging. So I know in the light of today's news, it seems rather impossible to even think that a Golden Age is emerging. But, you know, we do have it on the authority of the great avatar Satya Sai Baba, these prophetic children and infants, as well as the ancient scriptures of many cultures, that indeed we are at the time in which a golden age is going to emerge. And within a very few years from now, it's in process of emerging now, exactly like the phoenix that rises out of the ashes of a dying world. So never lose hope. Do not believe what you see in the news. There's actually a whole underground of marvelous, miraculous, hopeful, happy, joyful, positive, good things that are happening that never see the light of the average media. And that's what you need to keep focused on. You're going to have to dig underground or listen to shows on BBS Radio and other courageous outlets for truth to find this information, but it's out there, and you can find it. And then you can fill your mind with that instead of the, you know, the dark agendas rhetoric that they're trying to keep you afraid and intimidated by. So new times call forth those souls who come to set in place the new consciousness grids. Now, this has been a task that we've been involved with since the 11/11 of 1991, and this is a period of time that has been designed to bridge into the new millennium, and it completes in December, the end of December in 2012. So we're right at the end of that, and we've all been diligently working and networking and traveling and doing consciousness grid work for all of these years in preparation for this dimensional shift that we're now facilitating. That's really what we're doing. We're facilitating the consciousness shift. So you have to have a new consciousness grid in place in order for a new dispensation to be anchored and viable as a new way of understanding life. And the dispensation that we're moving into is one of a more globally responsible and compassionate approach to all people. And to life in general, a more just world is what is emerging out of this. And I would say a global conscience is awakening. A global soul is a collective soul is awakening. And with that comes compassion and caring for even the least of people, so that we can see a true humanity emerge that is based on caring and loving and sharing the resources of the earth. And that's what's been called the Christ Consciousness Grid. And we've all had a hand as light workers in placing our consciousness into that grid and helping to connect the dots again throughout the planet. So we are living in the most intense and the darkest period just prior to the full victory of light and the dawning of this seventh golden age. Today's bodhisattvas, the saints, the sages, the avatars, the ascended beings from other worlds, the planetary and celestial lords of light, and the noble men and women of previous ages are all taking some form of manifestation to assist in closing out this old cycle and to bring in the new era. And this has been often referred to as the externalization of the hierarchy. In fact, I spoke at the United Nations in 1998. I was invited to speak at the United Nations. And I spoke about this. I spoke about the emerging of the celestial and planetary brotherhoods of light and the inauguration of the Golden Age. And I spoke about it in terms of the planet, things that were happening on the planet, the work of the United Nations, the work of the different nations. I went into quite a bit of detail about that. The talk was packed. I mean, people were standing, which was interesting. It was standing room only for the talk. And then after the talk, everybody thronged around me to ask more questions and to touch me or have a word with me, which the organizer said was very, very unusual. And it was videotaped, although unfortunately I don't have a copy of that. And we did record it, but again, like everything else I've got, it's in storage in Santa Fe, so or Taos, so I don't have access to it. But I would love to listen now, these many years later, to see what in fact I had shared at that time. Of course, under the inspiration of the Brotherhoods of Light and the Ashtar Command, which I represent. But just prior to my being invited to speak, Ashtar had said that they would send a representative to address the people of the United Nations. And it was interesting. I never in my wildest thought it was going to be me. But that's how it worked. So you never know how you're going to be used in your mission. You just know that when the opportunity comes that you will be able to meet it, because you were born for a time such as this and you're well equipped to do whatever you are required to do. Now, because there may be experiences that were not available in previous times or unfinished business to be attended to, some of you great souls have elected to live more than one lifetime in this present lifetime. I've told you, I have completed 6 incarnations in this one body. Which I understand is rather unusual, because you don't just say you're complete when you think you're complete. You have a whole lifetime that you have to live through before you're complete. And someone who deals in those levels was able to pinpoint the different lifetimes I'd had and when they began and when they ended. And it was pretty interesting, because I've certainly had one heck of a life. I've done more things in this lifetime than most people have done in whole series of them, more than six. So, you know, without exception, every starseed I've ever met, every celestial emissary has picked the most difficult life paths, the most dysfunctional families, sometimes the worst marriages, the one with the most upsets and the most moves. And I remember my husband and I, I think we moved, an obscene number of times, something like 14 times within a certain period of time that we were living in Santa Barbara, California. It was just over and over and over again. We were shifted. And, you know, in those early years, who knew about these things, you know, to the degree that we do today? Who knew? We were all flying blind by the seat of our pants. So the point is, whatever you got going in your life, it's part of what needs to be in place for you to complete what you need to complete and rehearse what you need to rehearse for your own satisfaction. So you're the one that has to be pleased and satisfied, because you're the one that is going to be asked ultimately by the divine power, how did you fare in this life? You're going to judge yourself. It's like, how did you do? And you know, you're your own worst judge, so you better call yourself blessed now and become your own best friend and really know that you're doing absolutely the best that you possibly know how, given your karma, given your dharma, given your mission, given your understanding. You really are. You're doing the best you know how. And so is everybody else. So we can cut ourselves some slack, and we can certainly cut everybody else some slack too, because we only have responsibility for living in our own skin and blessing and being loving support to those who are working out their own destinies in their own skin. So are you one of those blessed ones? Are you, and do you know that you are? You know, I found it's really interesting that the highest and most advanced souls generally come in with, they're kind of shy, they're withdrawn, they have a lot of self-doubt. Very often they don't have very much self-confidence. And why is that? Well, I think it's because they don't fit anywhere. And, you know, when you're a young child, you tend to build, you know, in your early years, your sense of selfhood. Certainly by the time you're in your teenage years, you've pretty well decided your competency levels, more or less. And this is where you get the sense of low self-esteem and lack of self-confidence, when you're not supported in who you are and in being who you are. And it's funny, you never seem to doubt the people who question you. You tend to doubt yourself. You tend to say, there must be something wrong with me. It's interesting. You don't ever think that it's somebody else that may possibly not be seen clearly. So that's why I think they often do not have any clue as to what a great soul they are. Almost a characteristic of the truly great souls. They're humble, but not the kind of humility that we would call empowered humility. It's not humility to believe that you're less than God made you to be. But when you are a great soul and you know that greatness is manifesting through you, you're humble because you know you're not the doer. And that's the big difference between false humility and genuine humility. Now, these souls, great, great souls, you great souls, very often do not have a clue as to why you're here. You have a really strong overriding sense that you have something you have to do. But very few of you remember specifically what it is. In fact, I think I could be so bold to say is that none of you remember what it is. And you're not meant to know what it is a minute before it's necessary for you to know. This is strictly a need-to-know universe. But you will remember and you will know when the time arrives for that knowing and your specific mission to be fulfilled. So please don't worry that you're going to miss your curtain call. You won't. And in fact, you know what? You can't miss your curtain call. There's always going to be somebody that's going to poke you and push you onto that stage. One way or the other, you will be made aware at the perfect time to fulfill your particular part of this collective dance that we're engaged in. So there are some ways that you can begin to stir up your gift, so to speak. I think the most important thing is radical trust. You know, radically trust yourself, even if you doubt everything and everyone else. Trust yourself and risk. You know, dare to risk following your innermost knowing, which is another way of saying your heart, your love, your passion. You know, radically risk, radically trust, and follow your own innermost knowing and your loving. You know, every path of God leads to life. That's how you can tell that it's a divine path, is that it leads to greater life. For example, say you have an opportunity to do something very, very wonderful. Like, say, for example, go out on an outing with some friends. You're going to be hiking in the mountains. You're going to be camping out. You're going to go fishing. You're going to go yachting, whatever. And you really want to sleep in. What would be the most life choice that you can make, the most vital, alive choice you can make? Would it be to stay in bed and sleep? Of course not. You get up and you get out and you participate in life. That would be an example of choosing life. So every choice for life is a choice that you make with God. Every choice that you make for death or closing down or restricting or limiting is a choice for darkness. Very, very easy to discern the way of God. In the Celestine Prophecy, it mentions that when you come to a fork in the road, pick the path that lights up, that has the most luminosity, the most sunlight, the most beauty, which is another way of saying the most life. So from now on, when you are faced with a dilemma of what to do, ask yourself which choice has the most life in it, the most vitality. And do that, and you'll find you'll always be in the divine will. And, of course, life with God. You know, again, things that numb you out and make you less alive are all of the darkness. For example, drinking. Drinking numbs you so that you have less and less awareness and sensation in your body. You numb out. Same thing with drugs. Oh, they might give you a temporary rush, but at some point you come down from that high, and when you do, you're the walking dead until you get another fix. So that is darkness that's leading to death, that's destroying the brain and your apparatus of consciousness and perception. So those are choices for darkness, choices for death. Same thing when you're depressed. You know how to get out of depression immediately? Is to, number one, start chanting your gratitudes, even if it's, thank you, God, that I'm alive. Thank you, God, that I have two legs and two arms and two eyes, if you do. Or if you have one, thank God for whatever you've got going. There was one young man I was watching the other day on television, and he was born of a pastor and his wife, and guess what? He was a torso. He didn't have anything else. He had no arms. He had, I think he had, No, he didn't have even fingers. He just had no arms, just nothing at the shoulders. And then he had a little vestigial foot with like a little thumb and a finger sticking out at the bottom of his torso. And do you know that his parents didn't want to even pick him up? They didn't want to look at him. They didn't want to have anything to do with him. They were completely, you know, shocked and horrified at their son. So for the first, you know, few months of his life, they barely tolerated even taking care of him. And, of course, they were asking God all the time, how can this happen? You know, we're in the ministry. I'm a pastor. You know, what did I do to deserve this? Well, after a while, God dealt with their hearts and softened their hearts to the boy. And listen to this. That boy has been around the world 27 times. He lectures to thousands, millions. They gave the exact number. It was an unbelievable number of people that he has spoken to as an evangelist. He's an evangelist. He has been on all the major talk shows and radio shows and Christian programming. He plays sports. He surfboards. He rides the skateboard. He literally does everything. He's learned how to write with his little finger, you know, down in the bottom of his torso, his little toe. He writes with that little toe thing. And he gets up and down off of furniture, rolls himself up here, and rolls himself down there. It's absolutely phenomenal what this torso man has done with his life. And he, too, asked God at one point. It's like, you know, until I have an answer of why you made me this way, I refuse to serve you. He was angry. And God said to him very audibly, just trust me. Just trust me. And he had an incredible experience with Jesus, which changed his life. And he went from that state of deep, abject depression to this incredible ministry, which has now circled the earth many, many times and been a tremendous blessing to people, particularly, as you can imagine, people that have handicaps. And he, you know, he's just demonstrated how you can live a very, very full life. In fact, he said he wouldn't want it any other way now, that his condition has turned out to be a blessing to him because it has helped so many people, given so much hope and the vision of a life that can be quite full and quite fulfilling. So that's just one example of a blessed one that's chosen a very, very difficult life path. You can stir up your gifts sometimes by asking yourself questions and then moving your awareness to your higher self and answering the question without thinking. It's important to not think when you write down things if you want to access your higher self. That's not access by thinking. It's access by just allowing that stream of knowing to flow out on your paper. And with practice, you can teach yourself how to do that. Now, one of the very first things I think is important to track, maybe for some of you it'll be more difficult, but if you ask the Lord to help you, I'm sure he will help you to return to your first thoughts as a child, your very, very first understanding of yourself and your identity before you got conditioned. For example, I remembered at age 3 or 4, that I had come from a place very different from Earth. I remembered it very clearly. I remembered I had another real family and that I had an inner knowing that I was divine, that I was one with God. I also remembered scenes that could only be attributed to past life recall. I remembered coming here in a flying disc. I remember being left here by my family. I knew I could manifest things by thought. I knew I could fly and walk through solid walls. And I, you know, when I was very, very little, I disliked all things that you had to work at with by your hands, you know, like, for example, arts and crafts that you might do in Sunday school or, you know, pre-nursery or anything like that. I couldn't stand doing stuff like that. Or sewing, you know, I used to watch my mother doing needlework, and I couldn't understand why she just didn't, you know, think it and have it completed. I couldn't imagine sitting there and spending all that time to make something by hand. And that was a, you know, a recall that was bleeding through my earth consciousness. I remember as a very young child, I could close my eyes and focus upon the eye that I saw behind my closed eyelids when I focused into my forehead. And if I looked into that eye really, really strongly, I could get away from my body and escape the earth, which I did, you know, as often as I possibly could. I did not like being here at all. I also knew that my real husband was aboard a spaceship and not on Earth, although it was many, many, many years later that I found out it was actually Ashtar. Who knew? I didn't know. I just knew my husband was aboard ship. My body was also extremely sensitive to Earth's foods, and I only liked to drink things. I liked juices and coffee, and yep, I loved coffee even as a little child. I remember my mother used to say it's going to turn your knees black, so I would eat the coffee grounds and eat coffee beans and drink any coffee I could get my hands on, and then I'd sit and look at my knees to see if they were turning black. But I didn't like to eat solid foods. I was afraid I'd choke. And also I was allergic to nearly every food that was upon the earth and had stomach aches all the time. So these are things that often plague star-seeded youth. And the other thing I did, I worked out of body in the concentration camps and battlefields during the Second World War. And therefore I hated to go to sleep or take naps because, you know, immediately I'd be in some horrible scene helping people in and as an older version of myself, which, of course, as a child, I had no idea why that was. And, you know, children just assume that everybody goes through these experiences. And then when you find out they don't, then, you know, after a while, you develop this kind of curious fear and sense of self-doubt, as well as just this abysmal loneliness when you recognize that, wow, nobody does remember doing these things. So, you know, maybe something's wrong with me. And then people accuse you of storytelling or they just plain think you're crazy. So after a while, you just learn to be quiet. I remember I would climb up into the tallest tree I could find and talk to God. And, of course, my assortment of pets were always good listeners as well. So these, I think, are experiences that star-seeded children very often have. They have nightmares very often because they are resolving past life karma. And also they come under considerable attack from the dark forces. I remember I had lead poisoning. I had ptomaine poisoning a number of times. I had the dark forces tried to burn down the house that we lived in when I was 6 weeks old. I was thrown out the window of the second-story building to save my life. All sorts of things happened to me at a very, very young age. And very often the dark ones will target these special children to try to take them out if possible, so they don't fulfill their mission. So it's important that you keep your children always surrounded with the Christ light and the blood of Jesus. You know, just apply it like a salve all over their body, and that keeps the dark ones at bay. And always pray for them. Always pray with your children and for your children, and help them to cover for them until they're old enough to know how to cover for themselves. And even then, always pray for your children. So, no, not everyone goes through the same things. Only star-seeded children. So, whatever you do, remember from your earliest memories and sense of personal identity, those very first thoughts will give you a very strong clue as to what you're here to be and do. For example, do you remember having abilities that were paranormal or other gifts that you knew that you had, but you seem to lack the ability to access them right now, but you knew you had them? That's another example of a bleed through of memories of gifts that you have from, you know, the other dimensions. And if you could describe in one sentence why you're here on Earth, how would you describe yourself? I mean, do that as a written exercise. Why are you here on Earth? Write a sentence down without thinking. Just let it flow out on paper. My knowing about why I was here, I shared with my mom during my early childhood. And I said, Mom, I'm here to help troubled people find God. And you know, that in itself is telling, in that I never sought God for myself, because I always had a sense of the presence of God with me. Always. I cannot remember a time that I was not aware of the presence of God. I used to say God had his hand on my head, which was very interesting, because when I had that 5,000-year-old Bhrigu reading in India from the sage Bhrigu, that was the first thing that the Chaya Shastri that read the Sanskrit palm leaves, the very first thing he said was, you walk with God. God has his hand on your head. That is the grace of God that guides you. And I always had that sense. I always felt like God's hand was on my head. So my seeking was always to discover ways that I could help people find God and to encourage their faith in God. And I started actively teaching anyone who would sit still long enough to listen from the age of about 7 onward. I'd sit on the bed with all seriousness and teach people how to say the rosary, because I was a little Catholic girl. At least I was going to Catholic school. And I'd teach them how to pray and all that stuff. I'm just a little kid. So this is how your essence, your nature, your blessedness begins to emerge in advanced souls from earliest childhood. Now, here are some of the things that I know about you. And that would be those of you who really appreciate our weekly seminars. I know that you enjoy these seminars because you find that the information stirs or agrees with what you already have as a knowing deep within yourself. Did you know that we only enjoy and resonate with what we already know and agree with? Yeah, I mean, check it out sometime. You like to listen to people who tell you things you already know, don't you? Of course you do. We all do. And yeah, we really enjoy reading, watching, listening to, the things that speak to that part of us that already knows those things. And I know that you're strengthened, fortified, and comforted by these seminars, because practically no one out there directly addresses the worries and the concerns and the multidimensional, multifaceted dilemmas that are faced by the star-seeded ones, those of you who are here on Earth assignment. I also know that you wonder sometimes if something is wrong with you, because although you try really hard to fit in and to find common ground and interests and a worldview that's compatible with those of others, you really don't fit in. And, you know, some of you have really learned how to be a contortionist and attempting to fit in. But, well, you know, as hard as you try, you really don't. So don't feel bad, because your elder star brother, Jesus, didn't fit in here either. And nor has any other enlightened soul throughout time. So I know you are the elect, the chosen ones of these latter days. I know that you have chosen back. You were chosen, and I know you have chosen back, because you contact me. And you're interested in your mission, and you're interested in being the best you can be, and to to serve. And I know you're here to help heal and restore others to their sense of divine wholeness, and to love and nurture the hurting and the forsaken ones of this world with your otherworldly love. You have a capacity for this supernatural, unconditioned, pure love and the servant's heart of service that Jesus exemplified. I know that about you. I've seen it over and over again in your expression. I also know that you've become confused by the worldviews and interpretations presented as truth by science and religion and the media and society. I know that this bothers you because we all seek to belong and to fit in somewhere. I know that you're not here to fit in as much as you'd like to. You're not here to fit in, but to introduce a new galactic culture. A new galactic culture and universal worldview. You, beloved ones, are the vanguard of a race of Christ-conscious sons and daughters of God, representing this and a myriad of worlds, united by the cosmic cord of divine love. I know that you are the cream of the crop. You are heaven's best. You are the elders, the bodhisattvas, the saints and sages, all of those who have been born into this world specifically for this global transformation and graduation. I know that not a single one of you will fail in doing what you've come to accomplish. You are all experts in ascending planets and inaugurating golden ages. Why, our Earth alone has had 6 previous golden ages. So, you know, consider yourself an old hand at this. I know that you all have a strong sense of personal responsibility and want to do your best and give your all to complete your mission with honor, and you want to return home. And you will, beloveds. You will, beloveds of the stars. You will return home and not alone. And you are never alone. And know, again, that we have already completed this mission of ascending this earth out of time. And we are but reviewing in slow motion, in time sequence, what we've already completed in no time, in eternity. It's already been done. And yay, God wins. And the heavens and the earth are all rejoicing together, singing and dancing in victorious celebration. And we are bridging time with eternity right now. And in that place, Christ reigns supreme within and without. And we awaken to find ourselves at home in the heart of God, in the very center of all that is, as pure love, as pure holiness, as pure goodness, as pure eternal beingness, as freedom, as infinite creativity and expansiveness. So that's what we can hold on to and embrace of, because that's the absolute truth. So I wish each of you a blessed day of Thanksgiving to all of you in North America. And even if you're not in North America, let's really have a grateful heart. Because where there is gratitude, no other negative state can stand in the presence of gratitude. So let's go out chanting the sacred tone of Anai Hu, which is another way of coming into one accord of divine love and empathy. Deep breath. And as we sing forth the sacred tones of God, we bless all beings in all worlds and all dimensions with the love of our hearts, which is also God's divine love pouring through us. May all beings in all worlds have peace, have happiness, and know the glory of God. May we fulfill our missions and truly make our lives something beautiful that is reminiscent of our Father and Creator. You've been listening to Commander Lady Athena of the Ashtar Galactic Command. And God willing, I will be with you next week to share again things of interest to our star-seeded ones here upon Earth. God bless you. Adonai.